Good evening, everybody. James McCanny here with my Science Hour. This is for September 7th, 2023. And this I promised a topic that I promised a few weeks ago, and maybe it was last week, I forget. But I was talking about new terms, new scary terms. I mean, we're coming up to Halloween, so maybe this is the Weather Service's way of their Halloween prank or something. But they've developed all of these scary terms that are going along with the climate change narrative, which is, of course, total BS. I heard that there were 1,600 professional atmospheric scientists who signed a petition, a letter, an open letter, stating that science, the so-called science of climate change, simply is a complete hoax. It has no bearing on reality at all. And of course, that's something I've been saying all along. I've done complete lectures on all of the fallacies related to global warming. One of the side effects is that the price of housing insurance is going to skyrocket. Now, this is a side effect, and, you know, if you, so let's say you have a business, okay, you have a business, and of course you want to make a profit, but what if you could find a plan that would cause a loss, a temporary loss, but that would allow you to raise your prices where you could raise your prices significantly, double or triple them forever in the future, based on that loss. And the end result would be a very, very profitable future. It's kind of like doctors who get kids in. They get kids in their office and they start giving them prescription drugs or other whatever. And they know that those kids will be back to them throughout their entire lifetime because they're just creating business. And so that's well known in the medical industry. And the doctors make their money it's like a table they fill out. When a patient comes in, they have a standard of care that they're going to follow. And what they're doing is following some recommendations, and they put the results of this visit, patient visit, in a table, and then they prescribe prescription drugs or whatever. Then they get a score based on that. And then at the end of the year, they get their bonus based on them following this chart and having a high record. For example, some of them are beneficial, like if somebody goes in and says they're a smoker. Okay, well, we want to get you off smoking, but there's a whole series of things you have to buy, prescriptions and things and treatments or whatever, to get you off of smoking, which would be a good thing, you know. And so you would consider that maybe a lot of these things would be good things. But in a lot of cases, they're creating the long-term illnesses like autopsy or, you know, allergies or other things. And these are done by at a very early age. So the kids come back, you know, when I was a kid, there was nobody allergic to peanuts or something. It just didn't happen. You know, you never heard of it. And now it's like 60% of kids have allergies or allergic to something or have attention deficit or on and on. And so it's created. And so here we come back to the insurance, the house insurance industry. So what if you could create something that would cause fear and loathing in the public and an excuse to raise your prices? There we go. And that is what's going on with creation of storms, high wind situations, and then the insurance company goes, gee, we're going to go out of business if we don't raise our prices. And everybody knows that you should have insurance, especially it's required if you have a house loan. So everybody has to have insurance because they have a house loan. And that was one of the issues, for example, in Maui. A lot of the people were poor people, had owned their homes for literally forever. These were passed down These were passed down for generations, so they did not have insurance. So when the fire, if that's what you want to call it, the laser technology or whatever was used to burn them out, whenever that was used. And by the way, I'm getting calls from people about the fire in Maui. Number one, do an analysis of what actually happened, and number two, how to prevent other places. What do people do so that their house is not burned down by some raging person with access to high power, what appear to be, I don't know, microwave lasers or whatever. Anyway, and to not only do an analysis of what happened, but unfortunately, I don't have time at this point. I'm busy with other projects. And so, yeah, I'm sorry, but I don't have time in my particular schedule right now to manage that. But anyway, back to the insurance industry. But the comment there was that a lot of these people in Maui did not have insurance, so that's it's a total loss, not only losing thousands and thousands of people, family members, because the Hawaiians are very family oriented. So they had a lot of family members in the house, and a lot of those, they just couldn't escape. They just couldn't get out of there. There was just traffic jams in the streets, and it appears that they blocked the region so people could not get out. In other words, they wanted the maximum number of deaths in that fire to just basically clear out the people so they could not come back and retaliate. Okay, so anyway, back to the insurance industry. Now, this I reported a long time ago, starting actually a number of years ago, where I started seeing this happening, and you could see it in the news reporting. People going, "Oh, if these, first of all, you get the global climate change scare that it's going to cause more hurricanes and more bigger wind and higher waves and everything terrible due to global warming." And okay, that's an easy one because who can prove it or disprove it? Nobody. And then the warning that this could cause more hurricanes, and then the oh my goodness, it's going to cause insurance prices. In fact, one of the predictions, it was last year, was that four times the number of people along the eastern coast of the United States would be vulnerable to hurricane damage. And so anyway, that was a prediction on the news, on the from the weather media. So it was very coordinated. So the priming of the public mindset had already begun, and literally a number of years ago, and then it hit full force a very short time ago. So, but now it's becoming reality. They're saying that, like, for example, people in Florida. And there, of course, this last hurricane fizzled. They couldn't keep it pumped up in energy with artificial, you might say, artificial insemination of the storm. But the end result is that, ooh, scary, bigger hurricanes, water damage. And they always concentrate. I was watching the news, and there was a guy. Of course, they always have some newsman standing out there in the rain with the wind blowing. But you could tell it was a pretty dry hurricane. There was hardly any rain. There was some wind, but not very much. And the newsman is standing out there trying to explain how terrible the storm is, and it really wasn't one. It was like an average rainy day, with not much rain and not a lot of wind. But they were trying to convince you that this was the most horrible storm since the beginning of since Noah, Noah and the Ark. Anyway, the end result is that the insurance companies are claiming losses, and now there's another Category 5 hurricane developing in the Atlantic, and they're ooh, scary, scary. And of course, they at this point they appear to be coordinated and enhanced, let's put it that way. But what's funny also is the National Weather Hurricane Prediction Center back in August, came out with their midterm correction. In other words, from June to November, in August they have a midterm correction. They said, oh, this is going to be a bigger hurricane season than normal. And of course, that's all bogus reporting based on bogus science. The leaders of that group, Dr. Gray, I think it was William Gray and his assistant, quit one day many years ago. This is, well over a decade ago. Quit their positions with the National Hurricane Prediction Center, saying that all of the science related to their predictions was bogus, and left. But the National Hurricane Prediction Center continued using his work that he claimed was bogus, and this was I could go on, like Hurricane Lee, the 2009 and 1999, when I was predicting, by the way, 6 months in advance, storms based on electrical alignments in the solar system. But anyway, back to the insurance story. The coordination of the National Hurricane Prediction Center saying that there's going to be an increase in hurricanes and, of course, related damage. These are landfall hurricanes. And so this is a coordinated attack on your pocketbook. And also claiming that now hurricanes were more likely because of global climate change much farther north. And so, of course, you know, a third of the U.S. population lives in the northeastern sector of the United States. Southeast, the east, and the northeast. And of course, there have been hurricanes that have been north, up as far as, the New York and New Jersey, that have come in and done damage. But, were these manipulated? You can have hurricanes that far north because hurricanes are not created by warm water, not at all. They're a atmospheric event related to the vertical electric field, and you can read my books about that particular topic. But back to the insurance industry. So now you will see, and this already has been happening, people are already reporting doubling and tripling of their insurance bill. And now understand that if you are a homeowner and you're on a budget, and most people are pretty close to their budget when they get a house loan or whatever, they have the they're pretty close to the budget. And so if you increase something like gasoline, essentials, food, house insurance, or other services like telephone communications, or energy would increase the cost of a car, for example. It's basic things that everybody needs just to survive on a daily basis. Or if this is used to somehow raise water prices, something that I've seen before where all of a sudden a city claims that it has, that you cannot have your own well, for example, that they and anybody living in that city must use the city water services, then the cost of water can go up and you have no control over it. So there's another, bite into the, or that's just something as simple as the garbage man. The price of fuel goes up. So the cost of retaining, collecting garbage goes up. And all of these things affect people. In fact, it's a factor in my own business, I see, especially when you're in retail business. Even doctors and dentists who you would think, they got a lot of money, they don't. They're strapped. These are people with big bills. Probably a nice big house, nicer cars, a couple of them, kids in college, they're strapped. They don't have an extra penny. They're probably in debt up to their eyeballs. All of that stuff is on credit. The cars, the house, probably the college education. And they're going to be working until they're 70 just to pay off the debt to get back to zero. that's the way things are today. And so my point is that getting back to the house insurance, if you double or triple house insurance, that's, you're talking a few thousand dollars, many thousands of dollars per year. Unbelievable that people are caught in this economic trap. Okay, so my main point, however, was back to the original. I was talking about, first of all, I was talking about the scary names that they've developed for weather, and I'm going to get into that in just a minute. But the fact that housing insurance is going to skyrocket, especially in those places that are prone to hurricanes, these storms that are coming off the Atlantic. And if you can couple that with, like I say, you can take a year's loss saying, oh, the insurance companies are going broke, they're going out of business, and maybe a couple of the little ones might go out of business, just like the banking crisis. And then all of a sudden, oh, we can come in with Congress and pass laws to protect them, number one, protect them, and give them the ability to charge whatever they want into the future, even though the hurricane was a one-time loss. It's based on fear. So anyway, expect that, especially in those areas, southeastern, especially southeastern U.S., Florida, along the Gulf Coast to Texas, etc. And we just had a Hurricane Hillary coming in the West Coast, all the way in as far as New Mexico, where there was, remember the Burning Man thing? Well, the people were trapped there in this huge rainstorm, and the police blocked the entrance so nobody could get in or out. That, sheesh, can you imagine being in that mess? Okay, won't go there. But anyway, are these things coordinated? Are they planned? I don't know for sure. But even if they're not, the end result is staggering for the people that are affected. And of course, these are affecting isolated populations, but the end result is a great increase in cost. And that will be reflected in other things. So if businesses have a great increase in cost for their insurance, because their insurance is different than house insurance. House insurance is written based on geographic areas, but business insurances are based on their business profile. If they're retailers, they have stock, for example, and so their insurance can go up because not only is the insurance company insuring the building, but the stuff in it, and they have a lot more stuff than the average house owner, who just has some couches and beds and things that can be relatively easily replaced. So anyway, okay, back to the original story. Now I've got, let me count these here in my notes. I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 scary titles that have come along, and it's based on the, like I say, these are all new terms. And some of them for old phenomenon. And actually, there's a ninth one here also. I'll start with that one, and that's the one that led me into this story. It's called the Atlantic Meridional Overturning Circulation. Now, say that fast 5 times. Atlantic Meridional Overturning Circulation. And this is something that has to do with the warm water in the Atlantic and turning south and then enhancing hurricanes. But they're still pumping this idea that a hurricane is caused by somehow by warm water, and that an increase in salt in the water somehow increases the strength of hurricanes. All just bogus science. Because from a thermodynamics point of view, even if warm water created hurricanes, which it doesn't, that it's against all of the laws of physics. You cannot get an organized storm out of an ocean body relieving some of its heat into the atmosphere. It simply just cannot happen. It's an absurdity. And from an energy point of view, what's really happening here is, of course, the hurricanes are naturally caused when clouds build up, and this is in the month of August when we're in the height of the return current sheet, and also the situation in the atmosphere is that the vertical electric field is being discharged by these cloud systems that are developing. And when that happens, then the air at the surface of the ocean is ionized. And so there's an electric circuit between the ionized air at the surface of the ocean and the vertical electric field up to the ionosphere. And when the ionized air, which is positively charged, starts moving up the column, it swirls. It's the Coriolis effect. And that is what causes hurricanes. You can enhance that with laser satellites by enhancing that discharge, and that's how they control them and move them with laser satellites, not CERN and not HARP and not some other goofy, they talk about antennas scattered around the southeast part of the United States. None of those things control hurricanes. But anyway, this scary term used by the Weather Service, Atlantic Meridional Overturning Circulation, sounds pretty impressive, must be true. Okay, so anyway, that's bogus science, but it's one of those scary terms to make you think that there's something terrible going on, all caused by global warming. Okay, now here's one I know you've all heard, polar vortex. Okay, so these are cyclonic patterns that take cold air from the Arctic and bring them down to the United States, typically through the north central states like the Dakotas, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, etc., and or Montana, but more towards the central part, the Dakotas, etc. And we used to call this an Alberta Clipper. An Alberta Clipper. Now, a clipper is a clipper ship, and it was a very fast way to transport goods back in the 1800s. And big, sleek ships that carried cargo across the Atlantic. But anyway, so that's where the term clipper comes from. Alberta is the Canadian province where this air comes rushing across from the polar region. And so now they're calling it a polar vortex. Like vortex is like it's like swirling in. We're all falling down into this vortex. So it's really a improperly termed. A vortex implies a hole in the ground where stuff is going in. That's a vortex. And it's really the correct term is cyclone. And so they want to keep away from that term, though. But the old term is Alberta Clipper. So this phenomenon has been around since, of course, forever. And when I was a kid, they called it Alberta Clipper, and you knew that you were in for a week or two of 20 below weather. And so anyway, whatever. That's one of the big scary terms. That's the second one. Another one called the Pineapple Express. Now, this implies you're bringing wet air and flooding and water and flooding, like in the atmosphere this is, up to British Columbia and Washington State and Oregon. The Pineapple Express. And of course, really, where this moisture comes from is the Baja of California. And I'll be honest with you, there's really not a lot of pineapple growth in the Baja of California. But be that as it may, that's the term they developed, the Pineapple Express. That's another new term that, to go along with the global climate narrative. Okay, now here's the next one, tornadic water spout. I'm going to preface this one by I was in the Caribbean when I was younger, young, pretty young, decades and decades ago, maybe half a century ago. And I was walking along the beach in the Caribbean island. I looked out over the water, and there were two, not one, but two water spouts. And those water spouts were just moving along, kind of like wiggling, kind of like snake-like features, and I estimate they must have been a good half a mile high. And just a calm day. I mean, there was not a lot of wind, there was not a lot of weather. And here you've got two water spouts. And by the way, there are stories from fishermen. They're out on the ocean and in some kind of a storm, and it's raining fish. So where do the fish come from raining out of the sky? And what happens is they're sucked up in a water spout. They're just in the water, and they're going up with the water. And so then when this storm subsides, they come flying out. And so that must be a pretty crazy scene. You're on a boat, you're a fisherman out in the water, and these fish, you're trying to catch fish out of the water, and these fish are flying in and hitting the deck of your boat from above. But anyway, a tornadic water spout. And then see my notes here, says when a water spout continues over land. And okay, and this is a phenomenon also, because a water spout is nothing more than a tornado that's on the water. Okay, so we have tornadoes on the water and that cross over to land and become tornadoes. And you have to remember that tornadoes are pretty unique to the United States. For example, Russia does not have tornadoes. China really does not have a lot of tornadoes. The European continent, the north of the Mediterranean, sometimes you hear about a tornado, but it's really, really, really rare. Or tornadoes in England. I heard of a tornado that went like in London, which was, completely unheard of. But in the Caribbean also, water spouts occur, but tornadoes on land are just pretty much unheard of. Because most of the land in the Caribbean is mountainous. As soon as you come up out of the water, it's like variable, hilly, etc. And there's just not enough room for tornadoes and storm systems to develop tornadoes, except when you have hurricanes. Whenever you have a hurricane, a lot of the times the leading damage is done by tornadoes. When you have tornadoes landfalling in Florida, and interestingly enough, they started actually announcing this in this recent hurricane that hit Florida. They were talking about tornadic activity. And of course, if you want to scare people, that's a lot of times more scary than hurricanes. Because, say, an F5 tornado is going to do a lot of damage, a mile wide and with, 300 mile an hour winds. We're talking winds that are 200 to 300 miles an hour, a lot more damaging than a hurricane. As that kind of wind will take anything and blow it apart, brick buildings included. So anyway, the idea of a waterspout turning into an overland tornado, and of course that's going to affect certainly anybody on the coastline, but it's not a new phenomenon. And so this scary new name, the tornadic waterspout, is once again, they're trying to relate these to global climate change. Now here's one, and again, this is an old phenomena known about, it's a rare phenomenon called thunder snow. And it's a rare occurrence where you have, in the summertime when you have a lot of rain, a lot of times it's associated with lightning, which causes thunder. And so the thunder, what's thunder? Is a when the lightning hits, it causes the air to explode, an expansion and contraction of the air, and it causes a thunder clap, it's called. It's kind of like clapping your hands, but on a very big, powerful scale. And when you hear, say, electrical discharges on a small scale, you hear that buzz, that noise like that. What's going on is it's causing the air to separate and then collapse, separate and collapse very quickly. and you hear that noise. But with thunder, I'm sorry, with lightning, it's like a boom. In fact, you can count how far away the lightning is by counting the seconds, because the speed of sound, let's just on for round numbers, let's say it's 1,000 feet per second. I think it's like 1,200. But you count the seconds and then you multiply by the speed of sound and you get the distance from you to the lightning strike. And so anyway, now they're calling this thunder snow. This is a new term. But rarely, on rare occasions, you can have thunder when you have snow. And there again, they're trying to attribute this as a scary term to global climate change. This is something that, in a lot of cases, most people that don't have any experience with snow, real snow, only about a very, I would say, about a tenth of the U.S. population has had experience with serious snow. 90% of the population of the U.S. lives in the West Coast, the South, the Southeast, and the East Coast, and even up to New York. They don't have that horrible winters. And so, of course, if you're in New York or New Jersey, you can get snow. But south of that, D.C. and south, you have pretty mild winters. And so you don't have a lot of experience with snow, not the severe snow where you get 3 feet one day and then it's 20 below zero the next day or 40 below zero. But people living in the northern regions, and then this phenomenon is very rare, and a lot of people live in their houses and they're not outside like people used to be outside a lot. Now they're not. They're in a house, they're in a car, they're in the shopping mall. And once again, this is due to the vertical electric field and atmospheric electricity. Okay, the next scary term is called atmospheric river. And actually, this is a relatively old term, and it's been used for example, to indicate the amount of water in the atmosphere, water in cloud systems that are moving. From the ocean, it's an evaporation of ocean or lake water, and then that's in the air and it moves over land. And when it gets to a lot of times to the windward side of a mountain, it rains. That just change in pressure causes a change in that the air coming up against a mountain presses the air and it causes the vapor to fall out in what we call rain. But there is an immense amount of water in the Earth's atmosphere at any given time. And of course, I was in a thing called the XPRIZE. I was a finalist. And the concept there was that you should be able to extract this water from the air. It's very pure, unless there's dust contaminants in it or something that are easily filtered out. But by using processes, chemical or physical processes, you can remove this water from the atmosphere. The problem is, most of when you talk about atmospheric rivers, most of the water is high in the atmosphere. It's not down at the ground. And so how do you get your machine, whatever it is, up to where the serious amount of water is up in the upper atmosphere? And we live in the what's known as the troposphere. That's the part of the atmosphere that has weather, clouds, and weather is the troposphere, and then the land below it, of course. But the water is high. It's up in high in the atmosphere, so if you're going to try and extract water from the air, the question is, how do you get up to where the water is, or how do you get the water that's up there down to where you are? A little bit of a conundrum. And so getting water from the air, it turns out, is a very expensive process. It's a very energy expensive process, and for one very simple reason. It's a chemistry reason. It's called the heat of latency relative to water and the latent heat, and what happens is that to take water from the liquid, from the vapor state, I'm sorry, when it's in the atmosphere, it's in the vapor state, and turn it into a liquid is a very energetic transition. It's just the way it is. There's no magical way around that. And so you have to provide that energy. And how do you do that? Typically, you do that with compressors that are cooling, just like an air conditioner or just like a refrigerator. You're cooling coils and plates, and then you take fans and you blow water through this system to cool it, to cool down the air, and the water condenses and drops into a container. That's the basic process, but it's energy intensive because all of the supporting equipment. And but there are ways to there are intelligent ways to modify the system so it's very efficient, and that's what I had done. And in fact, I still have the product line of atmospheric water generators. But you have to understand people now and then write and say, "Gee, I'd like one of those, you know, get water from the air," and then but they don't understand that it's very costly. It's very costly. It's about 1,000 times more costly than filtering groundwater in terms of per gallon usage, etc. So another way of getting water is through reverse osmosis, and that's very costly. It's very expensive, but not as expensive as water from the air. Okay, so atmospheric rivers, once again, it's an older term. It's being used, however, in this conundrum of new terms to try and bring fear and loathing into the hearts of the public relative to weather or climate change. Okay, here's another one. It is called heat dome. Okay. It's when two low pressure cells converge and the heat from the south comes into some area and builds up what they call the heat dome. Okay, so this is something I've been talking about recently where these are manipulated storms because low pressure cells don't typically combine. They're maintained apart by the jet stream, by circulation patterns, etc. And so you can watch these circulation patterns all day at the South Pole. Go to one of the wind sites where they're showing the wind that passes over the water on a daily basis. And these cells don't combine. They simply don't combine. But if you're manipulating the storms, you can get these things to combine to do like a double whammy. And so that with the circulation patterns, both in the northern hemisphere and in the southern hemisphere, what happens is they bring warm air from the south and dump it into the northern climate in the northern hemisphere and the opposite in the southern hemisphere. So they're bringing equatorial heat and pumping it into the upper latitudes, both the southern and the northern hemisphere. Okay, so then the other thing is they're taking cold air and pulling it down towards the equator. Those are the two effects. And so if you're in a mid-latitude, what's going on is you're getting these heat waves. And that's what's been going on. They've been manipulating these, but what people don't understand, people are going, "Oh, it's really hot. Must be global warming." What they don't understand is that there's some place down in the equator, someplace where it's getting really cold, where it's supposed to be warm. And for example, Brazil lost its entire coffee crop due to snow. Can you imagine it's snowing in Brazil? And that's because it's not due to global warming. It's due to artificial pumping of heat from the tropical area up north, and the end result is the colder air from the north is being driven down south like an air conditioner. And so it's cold in other parts of the world, but of course nobody talks about that because the southern hemisphere is mainly ocean. Most of the land in the world is in the northern hemisphere. And so that's where the populations live. And so by driving that heat, equatorial heat, into these northern latitudes where the majority of people live, the majority of people think, oh, it's getting warmer all the time. And I hear people saying this all the time. I hear people saying, oh my goodness, it's really hot today. Must be global warming. You know, it's really real. And not having a clue that it doesn't depend on where you are at the time. You have to take an average temperature based on all the temperatures in the world. And down there in southern locations, it's really, really cold. There's people who can't grow crops because in their local area, it's so cold. And this is going on at the same time as it's really hot up in the northern, mid to northern latitudes. So this idea of a heat dome where two low pressure cells converge is an artificial construct. I think that's important. And that goes together. Once you start doing that, it's the same method as manipulating hurricanes, because a hurricane is a low pressure cell. That's what a hurricane is. So you have the ability to create hurricanes, create damage, increase insurance prices, increase government control. So on to the last one, the weather bomb. This is probably the scariest of all. The sudden drop in atmospheric pressure, again, nothing new, but once again, alleged climate change. So a weather bomb is all of a sudden you're walking around a very nice day, and all of a sudden the weather changes and you have tornadoes. And I remember a tornado that came out of the blue, and this was in the northern states. I think it started in the Dakotas maybe 10 years ago. And all of a sudden, there's this mile-wide F5 tornado on a clear blue day that races across the surface of the Midwestern states, causing tremendous amounts of damage. And so an F5 tornado, but out of a blue sky. And were these manipulated? Were these natural events? Hard to say at this point in retrospect. But the idea that all of a sudden there's a sudden drop in atmospheric pressure is also related to the laser satellite techniques, because that's what it does. You put a laser satellite beam into the atmosphere. It discharges the vertical electric field that creates ionization at the ground level. The ground ionization, the air, is part of the electric circuit. It starts coming up. It finds a single column to rise up. The circulation caused by the Coriolis force is then goes up the column, and it literally creates a low pressure cell. That's one of the issues also with the hurricanes, and the way the hurricanes short out is when they approach land. That electrical discharge shorts out to the land and literally is an electrical short. And that's why you don't have hurricanes typically over land. You do. You have low pressure cells that are stronger than others. And I call them a himicane in my weather book. I call them a himicane, kind of jokingly, because a hurricane, H-U-R, is over water. So I call the overland ones the himicanes. But they're not as strong because the electrical current is shorting out, and they typically don't have the huge range of tornadoes along the leading edge that a hurricane has coming off the ocean, because the ocean itself is a poor conductor. So the electrical current is between the atmospheric ionized air and the vertical electric field and the ionosphere. Okay, so that's the series of 9 scary new weather terms that you're going to hear bounced around. And there's another one, too. And I can't remember what it was, but there was a hurricane that came up the west coast of Florida and was coming into the Gulf from the Atlantic, south of Florida, from the southern south of the islands south of Florida. And all of a sudden, it makes like a more than 90-degree right turn. It coming up the west coast of Florida. And this weather guy used this term, and it was, I can't remember what it is offhand, but it was, I could add that to the list. If I remember that, I'll fill in the blank next week. Anyway, so be ready to hear these scary terms and to have your house insurance jacked up to the sky, to the moon because of all of the scary weather that's being so-called caused by global climate change. And I'll just be honest also, that a lot of the people go, oh, I believe in that. And these are people typically, even though they might be college educated, they've been, they're not scientists. And it's called science by emotion. It's like, the scary things that they learned when they were in college. This is their World War II. No, believe me, you have no idea what World War II was like. This is not World War II. But anyway, okay, on to the next topic. I wanted to talk about the collapse of the U.S. medical system. Now, this is something that's going on. Right now, the majority of people will not go to see a doctor. They have kind of become anti-doctor unless something is very serious, like a broken arm or something. They just tend to stay away from the medical community. There's just a complete lack of trust. But along with that, it's like there are a lack of 45,000 healthcare workers in the United States now. A lot of them quit, and some states are saying that they're going to use illegal aliens to fill this gap. Now, wait a minute. You're talking about highly skilled, highly trained medical technologists, nurses, people who are doctors, including doctors, and you're going to take, this is literally what one of the states they're talking about doing, is taking illegal aliens and somehow train them to cover this gap in the medical industry. And I mean, people who can't speak English, that I mean, you have to be trained in all like in Latin to understand. There's a lot of medical terms that are in Latin, including drug names, including procedures, etc. And these are people that can't speak English and really have no functional background in chemistry or in biology or anything. And you're going to train them in some kind of mini course to be a health provider. Oh my goodness. I mean, that just shows you how bonkers some of these woke people are. They just like, oh yeah, we'll just take illegals and train them. That's our solution. I mean, get serious, boys and girls. But the U.S. medical system is collapsing under its own weight. And of course, the whole system is set up where doctors are no longer independent. You will not find an independent doctor. They're all associated with a clinic or a doctor group or a medical group or a health group. And so the health group is the combination of, say, a hospital, a series of clinics, insurance companies who are in on the gig too, because, and then pharmaceutical companies. And so it's a machine to extract money from the public. And what you're getting is cookie cutter health. When you go into a doctor, they're not going to give you personalized care. What they're going to do is look on the chart. Patient A has system A plus one, and according to the chart, this is what you have to do, the standard of treatment. And if they vary from that, they could be sued for doing something outside the so-called standard of care. Anyway, this is pretty bizarre, but the entire idea of healthcare, there are many, many third world countries who rank above, in fact, not just above, but far above the United States when it comes to healthcare. And that is at a personal level. In other words, the person on the street, the average person, getting decent health care, you know, where they're actually doing something to cure them or to make them better. The United States ranks way down the list. In fact, it's rather comical to see that the United States ranks 43rd in the world in the use of the English language. If you can imagine that. Oh my goodness. Okay. The last topic I want to talk about here is AI and fascism. Now, everybody is racing towards this concept of AI. And I've talked about this before, last week, a couple weeks ago on my show. But AI is a buzzword. And most of what they're calling AI is not AI. It's a distributed database. It's a database that is drawn off of, for example, when you see an AI robot talking or moving or doing something, all of that is programmed. And so what they're doing is they're using relational databases to cause functions. And people do this. It's kind of like when you're acting like a robot. You know, like when you get up in the morning, you first, you know, you get up and you're kind of like walking around. You're kind of on remote control for until, you know, you actually wake up from a sound sleep. And that's what robots are doing. The robots that are developed today, and they're saying, oh, they're so intelligent because they can move their forehead and have flexing and they look like they're human-like in talking and they're... Oh, I'd like to talk to a human. It would be a fun experience. And, you know, so, but these are all, as much as they try and make it sound like these robots are autonomous, like a living being, they're not. They are not. But along with this comes the rush for governments to install AI. Isn't it just, you know, and this happens every time this comes out, you know, I've seen this five times in my career as a professional in the telecommunications industry. Every 10 years, it comes out knowledge-based systems or learning algorithm systems or whatever they call them, you know, historically, and they all go by the wayside. And the reason is you cannot keep them up. You can only do so much relative to being human-like. And so it's just rather bizarre to see this, to see people building these machines and trying to call them AI. It's not AI, it's relational databases. And they can be relatively complicated. For example, a Tesla, they say it's AI driven. No, it's not. It's a relational database. I just saw an article where they're saying that Teslas are very overly cautious around pedestrians crossing the street, etc. And anyway, much more so than just a regular driver would be, who would see, okay, there's people crossing the street, I can't run them over, you know, you have to slow down or wait. But these are relational databases, and they're making decisions based on logic patterns that are in a computer memory. This is not AI. AI is where a computer takes off and learns calculus or something, and then can then generate further theorems and understanding. And, you know, it's really to this date, when you find, say, mathematicians, like I have worked heavily in mathematics, you know, my prime number work and other branches of mathematics, a lot of my professional work in telecommunications dealt with encryption, where you are basically creating computer programs to defend computers against all kinds of outside threats. And so that's a form of like logic, but you understand that whenever you create a system, it's not going to be human-like. It's only as good as the programming that goes into it. And so building an AI system, really, there's nobody that has built an AI system. I don't care who you are. And the one big reason is because humans have a soul, they have a free will, unlike animals who just respond to their environment. AI is programmed, and I've seen all kinds of examples recently where programmed systems fail. And when they do, the people that are caught up in them have no recourse because, oh, they go, oh, that's an AI system, that's an automatic system. And they don't know how to fix it because, there's some flaw in it, and nobody knows what that flaw is. And all software has flaws. Let me just tell you that. It's just the way it is. And that's why you have constant updates from these companies that are making software. Okay. So anyway, the problem comes in when AI systems are taken over by fascist groups. And we saw this with Twitter, where Twitter was completely taken over by a group of people that thought they knew what the rest of the world should be thinking. The rest of the world should think like them. That's fascism. That's what it is. And so Twitter was an example of a AI system, alleged AI system, intelligent system, literally being controlled on a daily basis by little fascists. And but the other social medias that are still out there are still running on that basis. And so they're not AI. There are teams of people behind a relational database system that is being used to censor, to block, to shadow ban, etc. Okay. At any rate, I'm just about out of time here, but these are kind of fun shows for me to be able to talk about these topics and bring them to you, to the public. And I might remind you that nobody, you're not going to hear this kind of information anywhere else, certainly not on Fox News, which is kind of funny. Since Tucker Carlson left there, it's become, well, it always was one of the branches of the CIA misinformation network. Now it really is. So anyway, you have to be really careful of where you get your information, but this show is one in which you get unbiased, real analysis from somebody that has a real background. Not, and like I say, don't get your science from YouTube. People write in all the time and say, "What about this on YouTube?" Don't even look at it. If you want to know how to fix your bike, go to YouTube. But if you want science, don't go to YouTube. Anyway, I'm out of time. I will talk to you next week. This is James McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we're at the crossroads. Good night.